content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another episode of Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times, Washington Post, and AAA Go Magazine. Before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. In the June 18th, 2020 edition of the New York Times, I spotted this headline, "Help, it's been months. I'm still in a travel mess." Well, perhaps that describes your feelings about travel, considering the roller coaster ride we've experienced with the spread of the coronavirus. Times writer Sarah Fershine finds unclear policies, confusing consumer service protocols, and other things are definitely an issue for travelers. The columnist decided to see what she could do to answer some of the more commonly asked questions when it comes to traveling during a pandemic. And she begins with, "I've received thousands of emails from Times readers since the coronavirus put the brakes on travel in mid-March. And if there's one thing that's obvious, it's that the aftershocks of canceled trips persist. Unclear policies, confusing customer service protocols, and not yet fulfilled refunds continue to be an issue months later, and even as the world tries to reopen. This week, I dipped into my email box, grab bag style, for three questions to tackle in brief. And if you have one, well, just ask me at travel@newyorktimes.com. And again, her email address is travel@newyorktimes.com. That's nytimes.com, I should say. And Sarah goes by the name Dear Tripped Up. And in her first letter, "Dear Tripped Up, in early February, I used Orbitz to book a round-trip Qantas Airways flight from San Francisco to Melbourne, scheduled to depart in April. The flight was canceled. Who should one lobby for refunds in this case, the online travel agency or the airline? Signed, Meredith." "Hi, Meredith. I've gotten a lot of questions about this issue. Many readers report being herded like cattle from an online travel agency to an airline and back and then around again. Always start with the company that sold you the ticket. OTAs, like Orbitz, can change most reservations, save for certain types on some low-cost carriers, so you're well within reason to let the customer service representative do your bidding with the airline. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. When a flight to, from, or within the United States is canceled because of the pandemic, you're entitled to a cash refund. And if you're not getting that as an initial option from sites like Orbitz, it's because they can only process refunds after they've been granted that right by the end provider, here, the airline. That's why getting refunds from OTAs can be complicated, especially during this global crisis. These agencies are squished between an unprecedented number of consumer requests and airlines that stall or stonewall, or perhaps never pick up the phone. If you're hitting roadblocks like these, ask that your case be escalated. Orbitz and other OTAs have a hierarchy of urgency. Don't be shy about following up. That persistence seemed to work for you, even without my help. By the time I emailed Orbitz, a spokeswoman confirmed that the refund was already in process. Yes, it's now June, and although call volumes in March and April have leveled off for most agencies by now, the current environment is still far from normal. Patience is the key." Next letter, "Dear Tripped Up, I have a flight to France coming up next month. Delta rebooked me on a different flight on my original departure date, which seemed fine. I understand flexibility is key nowadays. But when I hopped online to double-check my options, I didn't see the new flight on Delta's schedule. In fact, it didn't appear until a few days later. What's the story?" Signed, Sabine. "Hi, Sabine. Although airline technology has improved in recent years, the pandemic has placed extraordinary stress on the system. Even as the world begins to open up, the flight schedules will be slimmer than normal this summer. Delta, like all airlines, has been compressing its schedule into fewer flights, so it's possible that the flight you were rebooked on was kept off sale to give already booked passengers dibs before being made available to new passengers. It's also possible that the new flight was full for a period of time, during which time it wasn't appearing on sale or online for sale. There are complexities to publishing and adjusting airline schedules for sure, but there is one upside to a system that's so in flux. mistake fares or bargain basement price glitches that eagle-eyed consumers can score before they're corrected. There are several websites to comb for these deals, including Secret Flying, Scott's Cheap Flights, and Airfare Watchdog. Dear Tripped Up, I paid $125 miles redeposit fee when I canceled my United Airlines reward flight a couple of months ago. How can I get that money back? Signed, Jen. Hi, Jen. Save for the famously flexible Southwest, most airlines have long imposed some sort of fee, usually between $75 and $150, when passengers change or cancel tickets booked with miles. These so-called restocking fees tend to lessen or disappear with elite status. Although commonplace in normal times, these fees felt particularly out of step at the start of the pandemic. Facing increased pressure in March, many carriers waived them. United took a bit longer than some others to reverse its policy, but eventually fell in line. On June 1st, the airline announced that it will continue to waive redeposit fees on all award tickets with 2020 departure dates. By the way, Sarah Fershein is a resident of Brooklyn, and if you need advice about best-laid travel plans that went awry, again, you can send her an email at travel@nytimes.com. That's travel@nytimes.com. You may remember that in previous episodes of Armchair Traveler, we have featured articles from the Washington Post ongoing series titled, You're Going Where? Well, in the January 22, 2020 issue of the Post, writer Kate Silver decided to check out pre-COVID-19 Madison, Wisconsin. And as the subhead reads, the Badger State Capitol is the quintessential college town, packed with trendy restaurants, bars, and shops, and is likely to satisfy all tastes. Well, let's find out what Kate learned before the coronavirus took over. And here we go. Long before I visited Madison, Wisconsin, I overheard a conversation among three women that went something like this. Woman number one, I'm from the Madison area. Woman number two, oh, I love Madison. Woman number three, Madison is like Sara Lee. Nobody doesn't like Madison. I've since visited the city enough times to know that woman number three might well be right. Madison is, in so many ways, the quintessential Midwestern city, from its inviting downtown perched on an isthmus between Lake Monona and Lake Mendota, to its character-filled neighborhoods, hiking and biking trails, 200-plus miles of them, and ever-present green space, including 260 parks and beaches. Madison is both the Wisconsin state capital, with about 250,000 residents, and a spirited college town, home to the University of Wisconsin at Madison, with about 40,000 students. You can't miss either aspect. The carefully planned area around the Capitol building, called Capitol Square, is packed with trendy restaurants, bars, shops, and music venues that appeal to residents as well as visitors. And the campus? It's a straight shot down State Street, past about a mile of beer and coffee bars, restaurants, boutiques, ice cream shops, a modern art museum, and performing arts center. It's a place where you can get your fill of traditional Wisconsin indulgences, like Friday night fish fries, an old-fashioned made with brandy. And while finding a healthy balance, as the locals do, in countless outdoor activities, water sports, cycling, and running in warmer months, cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, and ice fishing during the long winter. If you're coming from a larger city, Madison is an easygoing break from the chaos. If you're coming from a smaller town, it's a culture-filled adventure. Is it true, rather, that nobody doesn't like this town? Well, you'll have to see for yourself. Now she goes on to break it into some categories, and we'll look at those. And these categories include places to go, places to eat, places to shop, places to stay, and some special places to explore. We'll start with the local faves of places to go. The bundled-up winter personality of Madison is quite different from its carefree summer self. Thankfully, one beloved mainstay is available throughout all seasons, the Dane County Farmers Market. It stakes its claim as the largest producer-only farmers market in the United States, and that means that people you buy from are the people who produce the products. No reselling is allowed. And while its late winter version, Saturdays through April 4th, is more staid than the downtown summer incarnation surrounding the state capitol building Saturdays and Wednesdays in the 200 block of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, April through November, there is something especially gratifying about perusing hearty produce and products. Greens, apples, honey, potatoes, mushrooms, cheese, curds, pastries, and more when it's frigid outside. This year, the winter market is in a new location inside the historical Garver Feed Mill, a stately brick building recently renovated and reopened as a hub for small, locally owned businesses, a spa, a yoga studio, a kombucha, and restaurants. For a mid-sized town, Madison draws some impressive talent from around the world to its many storied venues. A few years ago, I saw Josh Ritter at the Majestic Theater, an intimate space that dates back to the early 1900s. On this recent trip, we were more spontaneous and bought last-minute tickets to see a stand-up comedy show at, again, the Majestic. Had we not lucked out with that performance, conveniently located a few minutes' walk from our downtown hotel, we might have checked out some place like the Sylvie, which recently drew the likes of Lizzo, Lana Del Rey, and Vampire Weekend. High Noon Saloon, which brings in national and local acts and hosts the storytelling event, The Moth. The Barrymore Theater, where you might find Matt Kearney performing one day and a fly fishing film fest the next, or one of the many other entertainment options from hole-in-the-wall to stadium-sized. Barbara Fry gives a tour of the Wisconsin State Capitol Building, which celebrated its 100th anniversary in 2017. The Barrymore Theater is one of the many storied venues in Madison that draws impressive talent from around the world. So, interesting places there. And then there are some guidebook musts, as she puts it. Downtown, all roads pretty much lead to the Wisconsin State Capitol Building. And yet, we didn't originally plan to go inside until, on a lazy Saturday morning, my husband points toward the dome and proclaims, "There are people up there!" With that, we had a new mission. Become the people up there. Exploring the building, which celebrated its 100th anniversary in 2017, turns out to be one of the more memorable endeavors of the trip. We pass by elaborate statues, shuffle by hand-carved furniture, admire the many different types of marble and stone, 43 types to be exact, and stifle giggles at a carved badger head. This is the Badger State, after all. On the sixth floor, a docent points up a tight, winding staircase that leads to the outdoor observation deck, where we take in views all across the isthmus. Back inside on the sixth floor, we walk through a small museum documenting the architecture and history of the building. There, the same docent points to a mural above us, explaining that the women in the painting are holding objects related to Wisconsin. We squint to see. They're not cheese curds or beers, believe it or not, he chuckles. Indoor activities are a must for blustery Wisconsin winter days. Are you noticing a theme here? And what Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, and that is MMOCA, or MMOCA, is a small but mighty diversion bonus, but it's free and not far from the Capitol. The building itself is a sight to behold. Designed by architect Cesar Pelle, the dramatic walls of glass look like a translucent ship slicing into the intersection of State and Henry Streets. On display through February 16th is Wisconsin Triennials, showcasing paintings, drawings, sculptures, and more from artists around the state. Beyond the galleries, a rooftop sculpture garden lures visitors up three stories of glass stairs to the tippy top, and in my case, past a newlywed couple patiently pausing between photos to allow visitors to pass. On inclement days, the sculptures are best viewed from Fresco, the adjoining bar restaurant. Now some places to eat, and starting with the local favorites. It's a good thing we meet up with friends who also happen to be regulars at Mintmark, a shareable small plates restaurant in the Schenck Atwood neighborhood, because it allows us to try more than 14, or rather half of the 14 items on the ever-changing menu. A hearty cheese plate, mussels and frites, a divine biscuit, duck terrine, kale salad, cauliflower, salt cod fritters, a skillet cookie. We eat with abandon, while sipping first on artful craft cocktails and then switching to $6 brandy old fashions on tap. And keep in mind, again, that's the local favorite drink. Because we scored seats at the chef's table, i.e. a four-seat bar peering into the kitchen, we're able to chat with the outgoing kitchen team and watch our meal come together, piece by delectable piece. If you ask around for the best brunch in Madison, you'll get a lot of hemming and hawing, and out of that hemming and hawing, at least one answer will probably be sardine. Pause. Well, the French Bistro serves dinner throughout the week, too, but the daytime hours are ideal, at least in winter, for taking in the floor-to-ceiling views of Lake Monona, upon which the restaurant gazes. The pastries are a beautiful start to the meal. We had a photogenic blueberry Danish and entrees creative, ranging from crab, bacon, lardon, and shrimp cakes to baked creamed eggs with prosciutto, spinach, and Gruyere cheese. The omelets, like the one I had with fine herbs and Gruyere, double as an excuse to eat frites before noon. Woo, some really highbrow delectables there, huh? Now, Mint Mark is a shareable small plates restaurant, features an ever-changing menu and $6 brandy old-fashions on tap. And the basement of the Tornado Club Steakhouse is also a perfect place to cap off an evening with late-night cocktails and satisfying beef tenderloin sandwich. Now we have some guidebook must if you're out for that kind of eating. At 5 p.m. on a Friday night in late December, when surrounding high-end restaurants are eerily quiet, the old-fashioned has a line out the door. What's the fuss? All things Wisconsin, served steps from the state capitol. This bustling bar and restaurant pays homage to classic American dairyland favorites such as supper clubs, cheese, beer, sausages, pickled eggs, and tonight, the Friday night fish fry. And a supper clubs, by the way, is not a restaurant. Supper clubs is a sandwich, okay? Now, the crisp perch and walleye are standouts. We also tried the cod, and salty meals pair perfectly with a sweet namesake, old-fashioned. Although the menu offers 9 old-fashioned options made with bourbon, whiskey, rye, and even rum, we both opt for versions made with brandy, known to some as the official, unofficial, rather, steak cocktail, and drink as the locals do. Upstairs, it's retro classy with its white linen tablecloths, wood-paneled walls, 28-ounce ribeye, and oysters Rockefeller. But when the clock strikes 10 p.m., the basement of the Tornado Club Steakhouse grows progressively louder and, shall we say, less inhibited as it bursts with people who are well into their evening cocktails and looking for a satisfying $10 beef tenderloin sandwich, a side of onion rings or perhaps escargot, and an unforgettable pineapple upside-down cake. The late-night lounge scene, which burns brightly until 1 a.m., is the maraschino cherry on a brandy old-fashioned-filled night. Well, now on to, let's say, places to shop, okay? And we'll start with some local favorites. Change is the kind of boutique where if you select a necklace or dress to try on, the staff knows the backstory of the product. And she notes parenthetically, for me, it was a necklace made by a local jewelry maker. Much time and thought is put into selecting each eco-friendly item at this shop, whether it's a scarf woven in Vietnam or a sweater knitted in Peru. You can feel good about shopping here, knowing that the artisans who made the products were paid a fair wage. It's fitting that the shop, which is owned by a local mom, is located on Williamson Street, a.k.a. Willie Street, in an area made famous by its progressive roots. Hazel General Store is that gift shop that all cities of all sizes should have. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. The kind of place that carries socks illustrated with flying tacos, jewelry made by local artists, American-made T-shirts referencing beer and cats, and do-it-yourself catapult kits. I have to think about that one, wouldn't you? Well, anyway, all the shelves and walls here are adorned with items you never knew existed but suddenly must have. Come to browse, leave toting a woodcut sloth magnet. Well, Sam Parker is co-owner of Contex. That's a menswear store where artisans craft leather belts and wallets on site. Change is an eco-friendly boutique where shoppers might find a scarf woven in Vietnam or a sweater knitted in Peru. Now, guidebook must say, you have to love that there's an artisanal cheese shop in the shadow of the Capitol building. The cheesemongers at, get this name now, Fro-magination, that's Fro-magination, are happy to chat about that and share samples of all things fromage, whether it's made locally or imported from afar. The shop is also chock-a-block with souvenirs such as locally made beer, the farmhouse ale, Spotted Cow from New Glarus Brewing, a cult classic, although I prefer the brewery's pale ale, Moon Man, made in Madison, cookies and chocolates, olive oil, cheese boards, and so much more. For a truly Wisconsin experience, check out their list of classes on all things cheese held on Thursday nights. Recent examples include courses on cheese and beer, cheese and chocolate, and how to build a cheese board. If luck is on your side at Contex, a rugged yet artisanal menswear store in Capitol Square, you can actually see the artisan at work crafting leather belts and wallets on site or in a workshop in the adjacent arcade. That leatherwork is sold under the First Settlement Goods brand. The small shop is also stocked with American-made boots, denim, flannel, and wool work shirts, bags, and accessories displayed tastefully amid circus posters and vintage art with the occasional punctuation of a mounted dead animal. Now, how about places to stay? Well, here's some local favorites. Paint cans, paint rollers, paint murals, paint drops. You get the picture? Well, the lobby, hallways, restaurant, and splashy guest rooms at Hotel Indigo Madison downtown are covered in the paint theme, and for good reason. The hotel, which opened last spring, pays homage in the most colorful way to the building's history as the Mott's Paint Company, which operated here for about 60 years. The staff is chatty and eager to make recommendations on what to see and do during your stay. And the location, a bit east of the heart of downtown, is a good launching point for exploring nearby neighborhoods. Capitol Square is about a 15-minute walk, and the restaurants, bakeries, and shops of Willie Street, known for its hippie heritage, are a 5-minute walk. There's also a complimentary hotel shuttle that will drop you off and pick you up around town on request. Now, Hotel Indigo Madison downtown does pay homage to the building's history, as we said, of the Mott's Paint Company, which includes some colorful themed designs. And then we have a large paint can greeting guests at the Hotel Indigo, which opened last spring and is perfectly located to explore surrounding neighborhoods. Now, here's a guidebook must of places to stay. Elvis Presley, Bob Hope, Bob Marley, Elton John, and the Dalai Lama have all graced the hallowed hallways here at the Edgewater, which dates back to 1948 and is the area's only four-diamond hotel. The Art Moderne-style hotel, which was majorly overhauled in 2014, has the undeniably posh air of a resort, with its Lake Mendota views, spiral staircase, bustling ballrooms, multiple restaurants, spa, and in the winter, an ice skating rink by the lake. I was pleasantly surprised to have a room and a large bathroom that look out on the lake, even though I didn't opt to pay extra for lake views when I made my reservation. Geographically speaking, the Edgewater is a 10-minute walk to the restaurants, bars, and entertainment of Capitol Square, yet still feels a serene distance from all the fray. And finally, some places to explore. The local favorites? Well, having spent time in a fair number of hippie havens, I briefly lived both in Oberlin, Ohio, and Boulder, Colorado, I associate them all with a particular shared smell, garlic, with an underscore of crisp toast. That's exactly what wafts beneath my nose on Willie Street in the Williamson Marquette neighborhood, outside of the Willie Street Co-op, located about a mile and a half east of the Capitol. I'd already passed by a mural at the Social Justice Center detailing the 1970s vision of the area, when artists, musicians, poets, and activists created their own countercultural enclave here, and the scent reinforces that hippie vibe is still alive and well, if tempered by time, gentrification, and a couple of CBD stores. A stroll along Willie Street, with its mix of comic books, vegan food, old and new bakeries, thrift shopping, cold-pressed juices, and a float therapy center, reveals a side of Madison well worth exploring. It has the feel and smell I've come to expect from a liberal college town. Well, here's a guidebook must. Trendy restaurants, craft breweries, lakeside parks. You could easily spend a day exploring Schenck Atwood, also known as Atwood or Schenck Atwood Starkweather Yahara, east of Williamson Marquette. It's a little bit artsy and a little bit funky, with a welcoming neighborhood feel. Start the day at the Tropical Olbrich Botanical Gardens, where $2 gets you entry into the warm, lush glass pyramid known as the Boltz Conservatory. Birds chirp, streams trickle, skin hydrates, and memories of warmer time surface. In nicer weather, you'll also want to wander the 16 acres of outdoor gardens, as well as the neighboring Olbrich Park on the shore of Lake Monona. For lunch, visit Garver Feed Mill for a slice of Ian's Pizza. I recommend the mac and cheese, odd as it may sound, and a scoop of Calliope ice cream, which comes in funky flavors such as brandy old-fashioned and jalapeno cornbread. Ooh. Then grab a beer or two at one of the neighborhood breweries. One Barrel is a great place to start. That is the name of the restaurant, One Barrel. And peruse what's happening at the historical Barrymore Theater, known to some as the cultural heart of Madison's East Side. And by the way, our writer, Kate Silver, she lives in Chicago. And again, you can find Kate on Twitter. It's at K, the number 8, Silver. At the letter K, 8, Silver. Okay? Some great traveling fun there with her, huh? Well, if you need to keep your travels closer to home, writer Virginia Brown suggests you dash to Ashe, located in northwest North Carolina, Ashe County. Her article's from the May-June 2020 issue of AAA Go magazine, and let's explore in the next few minutes we have remaining. partly situated, rather, in the Cherokee National Forest on the Tennessee and Virginia borders, northeast of Boone and Blowing Rock, North Carolina, Ashe County is anchored by the quaint towns of Jefferson and West Jefferson. The county is known for its charming rural artistic vibe and natural outdoor activities. The area also features colorful street murals, historic frescoes, and art galleries, as well as walkable streets filled with shops, restaurants, and a fun to tour cheese factory and store. And if I might add, before I continue the article, I have friends who've shown me pictures of cabins they've either rented or they own up in this area, and they're quite rustic and quite charming. Art Haven. From vivid outdoor murals to historic Benlong frescoes and more, Ashe County is a destination for all things art. Downtown West Jefferson offers the Ashe Art Center, home to the gallery and shop, a year-round exhibition space that showcases works and goods of over 100 area artists. In addition to the thriving visual art scene in the area, Ashe County boasts vivid barn quilts. That's quilt block paintings on barns. Now, print out one of the Ashe County Arts Council tours, and you can do that online. Just Google Ashe County Arts Council. It's divided into six loop trails, and it takes you roughly 150 barn quilts to see those. Some are sponsored by the Arts Council, others made by the community. St. Mary's Episcopal Church in West Jefferson is worth a short detour off the main drag. The quaint church holds the Mystery of Faith fresco. The artistic treasure of Asheville-based artist Ben Long, whose work appears all over the world and is archived at the Smithsonian. You'll find St. Mary's at 400 Beaver Creek School Road. So, lots of things just to do right there in Ashe County. Here's some other things. There's a time-honored hootenanny. Pickin' and Grinnin' lives in Lansing. Time it up for a Friday night and head over to Phipps General Store. This modest structure from a bygone era opens its doors for old-school hootenanny-style jam sessions weekly from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Grab a seat around the musicians or at the old counter and listen to some classic mountain tunes. Say cheese! These towering metal cows, or three towering metal cows, I should say, greet guests in search of the Carolinas' oldest cheese manufacturing plant. There's a piece of trivia for you. The trio are painted onto milk tanks outside the Ashe County Cheese, which has produced more than 20 types of cheese since 1930. In the gift shop across the street, sample cheese curds or bring home jellies and jams, local wine, fudge, butter, and more, and check the website for prime cheese-making times. After your tour, head to the Boondocks Brewing Tap Room and Restaurant for one of their craft beers. Their locally focused beers rotate regularly, but favorites like JMB Stout, Honey Orange Kolsch, and Crumpler Crippler Citra 2X IPA are available year-round. And then you can take a hike, winding through the country. The Blue Ridge Parkway boasts all kinds of hiking trails, and there are plenty. And picnic spots as well, rock climbing, and a lot more, while the New River offers canoeing, rafting, and trout fishing. Five hiking trails ranging from child-friendly to strenuous draw outdoors enthusiasts and casual nature lovers alike to the Mount Jefferson Natural State Area. An investment of about an hour yields high returns. The beauty and biodiversity of the mountainous forest with expansive views of the surrounding countryside. So thank you, Virginia Brown, for our Dash to Ashe. What a lovely place indeed. And that brings us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it. You'll listen next time. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.